You are listening to the Palestinian radio program from CKUT 90.3 FM. Our second segment is an interview with Joanne Bougie, a Canadian nurse volunteer who traveled to the Palestinian territories to help injured Palestinians and to join medical teams and ambulances of the Palestinian Red Crescent in emergency and traumatology. Welcome to the program, Joanne.
Thank you.
Tell me, what is traumatology first?
Oh, traumatology is mostly help the people that are injured from all kind of accident, war, disaster, or could be car accident. So we call it traumatology. It's like everybody knows the golden hour of traumatology. We try to save life within an hour of an accident or something like that.
And you want to practice that in the Palestinian territories, in Gaza and the West Bank. Tell me about your trip and how long did you stay there?
Actually, I must say that I went on my own with a reason. In particular, was to find out the reality and then to be a witness of the situation in Palestine. So I went there for 3 months, about 3 months in the fall of 2001. So I was there before, during, and after the war in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. And today, for example, there was an incident or an attack where 12 Palestinians were killed and about perhaps 60 people were injured, attacked by the Israelis, by the helicopters and tanks, mostly children and civilians. I guess most of the people saw that on television. But tell me, in a situation like this, what would you do? What did you do exactly in Gaza? This incident happened in Khan Yunis, but what did you do? Or how do you respond when you receive a call?
The situation was very difficult for the health care too. First of all, because when I was there, we had ambulance that are very, very. The equipment is very little, very, and then we cannot use the best ambulance with anyway with full equipment because they're shot at or they're being destroyed on the way to the wounded camp. So we always had to to use the equipment that or the ambulance car that were the last equipped and the last more destroyed, but at least they won't do more damage to the good one, to the equipment. So it's very hard to save life in this way because we are not very equipped when we get to the wounded people. And then often the road, there is checkpoint. Gaza Strip is about 15 kilometers by 4-5 kilometers. Within the Gaza Strip, within this 15 kilometers and for, there is a checkpoint, and there is also Israeli colonies that are fully armed. So the possibility for to get through to where the wounded were, or where the shooting is taking place, it's always very hard. We get there, and then often we try. Sometimes the ambulance were used. We try to put it in a way so that they don't shoot at the kids. And the kids were hide behind the ambulance, and they continue to shoot at the ambulance themselves. So we could not work because we have ourselves with the kids to hide behind the ambulance. So and they were deliberate shooting at the ambulance. And the only thing we were doing is trying to get the wounded at the scene. And so the only way we get the wounded most of the time is by the people carrying the wounded up to the health services. And first to the ambulance, and then the ambulance try to bring him to the some tent that are settled in place where it's safe for treatment and things like that.
Did you go yourself in the ambulance? Did you go help the injured or the people who were suffering?
I did.
Tell us about one of the cases or two where you participated in this incident.
I think the cases was the worst cases that we couldn't do anything is like at the anniversary of the second Intifada. one year anniversary, where this kid was about 13 years old. We knew the age after. He ran towards us. He was like, there were a bunch throwing rocks during the anniversary at the tank. And he rushed towards us. And then he said, I think I've been shot. And then we could not figure out, because he was running and he was talking. So by the time he lay down on a stretcher, he arrested. So we couldn't save him, because he was probably went into a tamponade or big, massive pulmonary embolism hemorrhage. So we could not save him. So that's...
He died?
He died, yeah.
He was running and then stopped, put him in the stretcher?
He did. He put himself on a stretcher. He said, I've been shot. And by the time we found out what happened, he was already into arrest. And then we tried to reanimate. We took a picture of this scene, because that was a suggestion of one of the women technician, ambulance technician, that said to me when I was looking at all these kids and being shot at, what can I do? It's unbelievable. People have to know that. But, so they said, why don't you take pictures? So we tried to find cameras we can, and then some people, when we were doing the maneuver, they took pictures. So we have to scan those pictures, because that's the problem that's why I didn't want to go with an international organization, because when you go on your own, you can do things that you don't have to have the permission. So I did take a picture of this scene, of many scenes of killing, and we had to scan them. We could not carry them through the border, so we had to scan them and send them to Canada through internet. So we had picture of kids being injured when they were throwing rocks, and then I've seen 6-7 year old kids being shot at just because they were out of the refugee camp. At the end of some refugee camp, they have tank and rifles, and the kids throw rocks at that, and they get shot, and that's the way it is. And also they shot all over nights, during the nights at the camps. So everybody that gets on the street, on the little alley, they're shot. It's very hard for us to go and get them, because it's too narrow. So we have to hope that they crawl to the closest place where they can get help, because nobody can go and get them on the street when they are... their shots. So we have a few also that were like when they bombard, we find them later on, like hours later, we found them dead in a little whether they're a little shack where they were, because many people, they cannot, because of the checkpoint, they cannot travel from one city to another within this 15 kilometer because of the checkpoint. So they lived in a shack or anywhere like close to their work the next day, and then so they were bombarded, and then they were found dead, 4 or 5, like sometimes like dead, they were playing cards, and they were what, 17, 18 years old kids, that so, and we just couldn't do anything. We just got...
So Giovanni, you booked the airlines, you bought your ticket, and you went there. What motivated you to go there, and did you achieve what you were searching or looking for?
What motivated? I must say, my son went twice. He was there 5 months just before the second intifada, and his friend was shot in the head. And then my son was very disturbed by the reality in Israel, the occupied territory. And he said, John, you have to see that one day, because you have to meet those people. You have to. And he knows, because as a nurse and also because of my work all my life for justice. So he said, you should go and see. And then so I said, I cannot. I tried to go with international organization, but I say my objective was clear. It was to be a witness, and obviously I didn't expect that much. But I said, you know, to be a witness, it's difficult if you're not going on your own with your own ideas, because you cannot be there and silence after. It's impossible. For me, to go and offer help is to be able to say the truth without any tie behind you, money or whatever, when you come back. And I think I succeed that. When I was there, it was hard. It was much harder, because the risk was always greater, because I traveled between Gaza and West Bank, and I have to carry documents, because sometimes and things like that, and it was not always safe. And then, but I think it was worthwhile, because then I could I feel that I did, and I went wherever I wanted to go. And then and it was possible for me to go wherever. Like, for example, I remember when Red Crescent, I want to go to Ramallah just after the, in November 2001, there was the massacre in Bethlehem. And then the ambulance one tried to go, and nobody could go. And I said, you know, I have to go. And then the Red Cross helped me to get to Jerusalem, and from for Gaza. And I said, they said you cannot go into. I said I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go. So I was able to go on my own, because I have so many friends all over the. So they were able to pick me at different checkpoint. And
so how long did you stay in the West Bank? Did you work also with medical teams?
I did, and it's different in the West Bank. It's because there's a much more checkpoint. Because it's different in the sense that all the little city, the little village are surrounded by the army, and some inside of the city. So for the ambulance to get from one little village to another, one city to another, 5 kilometers is maybe 4 checkpoint. So you it's and there is on the most of the hill have colonies which are armed too, so they shoot at the ambulance on our way between one village to another. That's what happened at night, especially between Ramallah and Bella, you know, where we try to get some people there. So it's very difficult. It's always a difficult work. I mean, many were in Germany, ambulance technicians were killed, and then few were killed, I must say, and many were injured. And then it's scary. And I think also to ensure my protection also was sometimes something scary for them, because they're very protected. They didn't want anything happen to me. You know.
Could you? Was it worth it? Was it worth the experience and the knowledge for you?
It is. It is. I mean, any for them. First of all, for them, it's very important, because you know. I mean, when you live in such a situation where you know the whole world is not in, they don't feel supported by the world. Okay, because of the way they are portrayed towards in the world. So obviously, when they see somebody from outside,
you mean the Palestinians
don't feel they don't feel any respect and any support, and they feel very. Simple question: why don't people not love us? But I said, because people don't know you, you know. So obviously, when they have some people from outside, and I try to bring hope, you know, in the sense that I say, listen, I mean, if in South Africa the justice won, I mean, the apartheid has been dissolved, and I said in Vietnam, I mean, nobody would happen now, but at least they get rid of the big American army. So, and then I said, you know, if this happened in time, then something like the justice will triumph here in Palestine one day. No, so I try to, and I really believe in that. And then no, that's one thing. And the other thing is also, like, I mean, it's clear for me that you know, I mean, to you have to find out through the way things are over there. It's clear for me that the most important things for Israel is to get rid of the Palestinian people altogether. Whether, like, till the first Intifada, it was by pushing them, by massacring, going into the village and pushing them away, and they did succeed to some extent. But now, since the first Intifada, is the people uprising. So this is a big difference for Israel. So now they're trying, they don't know what to do. So that's why they don't know. They have to push them away. They have to get rid altogether of the Palestinian people. That's, and then when you are there, you feel it. Because it's a war, it's an occupation against civilian. There's absolutely no equivalent of army. The Palestinian army has been set up by Israel to kill their own people. And it didn't work, because obviously the Palestinian army are brother, sister, and cousin, and uncle, and so there's no way they will kill their own people. And that's the big, big, big problem for Israel, because that was their objective with the setup of the Palestinian army, was to, if we cannot kill all the Palestinians, maybe the Palestinian Authority or the Palestinian army will do the job, and they did not. So now they're a bit of big problems. So that's why now they use the war against terrorism. I mean, and then when you are in Palestine, you are occupied. Like every village, you get out of your house. Where I was in some place, like, and you, the Red Crescent in Ramallah, like just up the hill, there is the army, and they shoot any time at the door. The door are full of holes and bullets and everything, and even at the ambulance. So I mean, there's no security, Palestinian security there. They just shut whenever they desire at night, or we cannot go and sit and read a book outside of a house in Ramallah or anywhere. I mean, we at night without thinking of being shot, you know. And that's one thing you learn when you go there. So I mean, it's obvious there is no respect, and so when you're there, you find out that, you know, the